don't think a whole lot of further introduction is necessary. I will ask one favor of you, though, and that is if you are praying during service while I'm speaking, don't do the hands folded and head down thing because your neighbor might think you're sleeping, especially if you start drooling and snoring. Well, like Mike said, my name is Jason, and it honestly is a true privilege to be back here this morning sharing the word with you. It's been really cool to see the process that Illumination Church has gone through over the last couple of years, and especially over the last half of a decade or so. From its early days of meeting in an elementary school with sometimes as few as 15 to 20 people. When we came to this building, we kind of piecemealed a team together, and the only person on staff with any ministry experience, paid ministry experience, was our lead pastor, and he had never been a lead pastor before. And so that's kind of where I want to start today, and that'll be like the launching point and the theme throughout what we're talking about, is these small things becoming big. These small things exponentially increasing, and small things growing to something much larger and greater than you could ever imagine. And so to start off, is anyone in here a farmer or a retired farmer? Okay, there's one person, that's great. And I say retired farmer jokingly. I don't think I've ever known a farmer to retire, right? They just keep working and working and working. So is anybody like, you grew up on a farm, but you didn't farm yourself? A few more. Anybody got friends that are farmers? You've maybe met a farmer once in your life? How many of you, if you're totally honest, would say, my extent of farming is watching a John Deere commercial on television? That's the kind of farming that I can get down with, right? You see, I don't know, like, I think farming sometimes, people are like, oh, well, it can't be that hard, right? Like, you just put some stuff in the ground, and you dig a hole, and you water it, and it grows. Like, that's really all you have to do. It should be as simple as that, and that's kind of the idea that I had, right? Like, farming shouldn't be too difficult. Anybody should be able to do this. And so several years ago, we bought a house out in Elko. And when I say that, I know you're thinking banjos and other things. But no, we're like on the outskirts of Elko and like a more rural development, mature trees all around. And the previous owners had done this awesome thing. They cleared out this huge garden. And I say huge garden, I mean huge garden. I think it was like 24 by 24. This gigantic piece, it was a mini farm, we'll call it, so that I can say I was a farmer. So we had this crazy idea. Krista, my wife, and I had this crazy idea one year. She says, I'm going to plant all this stuff, and we're going to eat all of this food that we grow. And I was like, sweet, what's our experience in that? She's like, none, but we're going to make it happen. And so we started with some seeds and some like, you know, starter plants, and we put them in the ground. We're like, this is going to be the best thing ever we're going to have. We're just going to have an abundance of food coming out of our ears. We're going to be able to share it with the neighborhood and share it with everybody that we know. We're going to have so much in this gigantic garden. I think that we ended up eating like 8 green beans and 2 potatoes from our entire garden. It turns out gardening, farming is not for us. And so now we're plant people. We have succulents and houseplants around, which are very hardy, and they don't require a lot of maintenance. You just kind of give them a little water every now and then, and when they start to look dead and you're like, oh no, I've killed the plant, you can water it and it comes right back. It's really nice and convenient. But what it always amazes me is that with farming, like from the smallest of seeds, these big, huge things can grow. My father-in-law likes to say that in the middle of August, when the heat is super heavy and the sun is just beating down, like you can almost hear corn stalks snapping as they're growing up, right? Through this tiny little corn seed, these amazing stalks come that are way higher than your head. Farming just amazes me in that way, and that's kind of where we're going today with this parable. To set it up, Jesus has been teaching people through these short stories, and he's about to go and do some really big things. He's about to go walk on water, and he's about to go feed 5,000 plus people with just a couple of fish and a few loaves of bread. First, though, everybody that he's talking to, I think they need to understand who he is and why he's there and why these things are happening. And so he's been teaching them about himself and the kingdom of God through these short stories called parables. And I'm sure Mike has given you a very good explanation of what a parable is. I use two that that are kind of like my quick definitions of what a parable is. The first is it's a simple story that teaches a simple truth. That's a super quick working definition for us this morning, but I think there's something a little deeper to it. And so I think a parable reveals something that is unknown or unseen by referencing something that is common knowledge to the audience. So these stories aren't actually about what he's saying they are on face value. He's using them to relate to himself or to the kingdom of heaven. And so Jesus has just given two parables about the kingdom, both referencing seeds and planting. And Mike preached on those a couple of weeks ago. The first is a parable that explains how his teaching is broadcast to everyone. That the kingdom is for everyone. The word, the good news, is spread out to everybody, but different people receive it and act on it differently, right? And the second, I think it ties perfectly well in with that, it's that where there is wheat, where the gospel and the kingdom grow, there are also weeds. They grow side by side. They grow together in the same field. There, where the gospel and kingdom grows, there are lies and there are works of the enemy growing up alongside it. As Pastor Mike explained, the good and the bad both exist side by side here on earth, and we're to be patient and trust that God has it all under control. Difficult to do. Jesus is teaching his listeners to be patient with the work that he is doing. The seed starts small, but it grows exponentially over time. I think a further point in that parable, and I'm not trying to take away or supplement Mike's teaching at all, but something that really hits me when I read that parable is that it's not our job to judge what is wheat and what are weeds. It really isn't. It strikes me that, like, we think we know, but we can't see the heart of people. We don't know motives. We don't know the heart behind things that people do. And so if we go all crazy and start uprooting the wheat, we're bound to get some wheat with it. It's just not our job. And that leads me to the question, what is our job then? And I think that's where Jesus picks up in this parable, just right after the parable of the weeds. Jesus is preaching at a place aptly named the Cove of the Parables. I think it was named that after he taught there, but it's like a signpost, like the Cove of the Parables, and Jesus goes, oh, this is a perfect place to preach. But it's this huge cove on the Sea of Galilee, and 5,000 to 7,000 people, maybe even more, could have gathered on the shoreline there to see the person who was standing on the shore just offshore a little ways in a boat speak. And they say that twice or maybe even three times more people than that could have been up on the hillside listening to someone. It was this amazing feature that's like a natural amphitheater. And so a person at the top of the hill, while they could barely see the person speaking, could hear them actually quite clearly. And so Jesus is there teaching these parables. He teaches the parable of the weeds, and then he goes into this short little section in Matthew chapter 13. And if you want to follow along, I think the words are going to come up on the screen. My version is going to be slightly different than yours because I'm reading from the ESV. You guys are going to see the NIV, but you'll get the main idea. This is in verse 31. It says, he put another parable before them, saying, the kingdom of heaven is like a grain of mustard seed that a man took and sowed in his field. It is the smallest of all seeds, but when it has grown, it is larger than all the garden plants and becomes a tree, so that the birds of the air come and make nests in its branches. He told them another parable. The kingdom of heaven is like leaven that a woman took and hid in 3 measures of flour till it was all leavened. Now, Jesus usually explained his parables to his audience, but these two he doesn't. And I think it's because it's not really hard to see the implications in these parables, especially given what he's just talked about being the kingdom. These two parables are just 3 sentences long. Yet they give us a really clear idea of what the kingdom of heaven is like. He's saying that a tiny mustard seed, and like you can't even probably see it, but I have one between my fingers here. If you can't see it, you just have to believe me. This tiny little mustard seed will grow exponentially to become something great. And now, not many of you are farmers, and so it might seem a little bit foreign, but I think there are a lot of modern day examples of this too, right? Like if you're to think about seeds of any kind, if you've planted a garden and been successful at it, you've seen the fruits of something small being planted becoming something big. Think about human babies, right? Start as two microscopic cells and end up becoming living, breathing things. And I'm not going to pretend that everybody in here knows or believes 100% in the kingdom. Maybe some of you are questioning, and so you might not be down with the whole creation gig. And so for you, the whole universe started from a speck of dust. And we see all around us tiny things growing into the biggest, most amazing things. Jesus himself started as a tiny baby in the humblest of birthing suites. Didn't have a team of nurses around him and all the comforts of modern medicine. Was born in a stable, in a barn. He came from Nazareth. The Pharisees at one point make it a point to say, isn't this the guy from Nazareth? A little nothing town, kind of like Elko, right? You're like, isn't he from Elko? No, nothing good comes from Elko. He lived a completely normal childhood, his teen years, his 20s. We really don't read anything about it. Pretty normal. And then he starts his ministry with these uneducated, untrained, and often faithless fishermen. These guys have no idea what they're doing. Jesus is teaching the first point of his parable, I think, throughout his life and his upbringing. But then he brings it full circle by talking about the mustard seed. He's teaching that small beginnings can grow exponentially. Small things can see exponential growth. Pastor Mike and I were comparing notes, and he called it the mustard seed effect. I think that's aptly named, or I think he had a good name for that. Talking about the kingdom in this parable, it happened. The mustard seed effect happened regarding the kingdom that Jesus is referencing. We're sitting here in a church today, 2,000 years after he preached these words on the shores of the Sea of Galilee, and it grew just how he said it would. As a side note, but I think it's an extended thought of this concept, a lot of people get lost on thinking that their faith has to grow exponentially, and they have to see fruits that are growing, and people are coming to faith at their feet. But I just get to preach on this at home church, and I think often we get lost because we look at celebrity pastors. Or we see people on TV, or we see people in the church around us that have so much more fruit to show for their labors and for their faith. And I got to preach on this at church, and hopefully it strikes a chord with you that Jesus said that if you're a believer in him, you would produce fruit. He didn't necessarily say it had to be gigantic fruit. Right? Like little fruit is still fruit. This tiny mustard seed is still a seed, and it still has the potential to become something great. A small faith, Christian, is still a faith. From the tiniest of fruits are still fruits. It's just our job to live that out, whatever it may look like. It looks different for everybody. And you may never see the effect. We prayed this morning before the service that we may never see the effect our faith has on somebody else. But that's not our job. God can take the smallest beginnings and turn them into things of epic proportion, which leads us to the reason for all that. And that's because the kingdom and its promises provide a safe place with shade and shelter. There's safety and there's comfort in the gospel. Jesus says that it's like a tree that the birds of the air come and make nests in its branches. There are many more people in the world that need to hear the good news that you have heard. There are many more. In the parable, Jesus describes this huge tree and the birds are coming and landing in it. And now this isn't botanically correct. Like this mustard seed and the mustard seeds that Jesus is referencing, they don't grow into something that resembles a giant oak tree, right? With all these huge branches and leaves, and there's all sorts of animals living with it. But I don't think Jesus is giving a lesson in horticulture what I think he's doing is making a reference to an Old Testament passage from the book of Daniel. And I'll read it for you real quick. It might come up on the screen. This is from Daniel chapter 4, verse 10. Nebuchadnezzar says this. It was a dream that he had. He says, "I saw and behold a tree in the midst of the earth, and its height was great. The tree grew and became strong, and its top reached to heaven, and it was visible to the whole ends of the earth. Its leaves were beautiful and its fruit abundant, and in it was food for all. The beasts of the field found shade under it, and the birds of the heavens lived in its branches, and all flesh was fed from it." Jesus is teaching a super important lesson about the kingdom, and that's in its branches, people find shade and shelter. That's part of what the kingdom does here on earth. It gives us troubles from this world by providing a hope for a future that goes beyond what we can see. It's a simple message, but it has huge implications, which I want to explore those last two with the time we have left. The implications are because there are many people who haven't heard, because there are many people out there without shade and shelter, they're spiritually homeless. The spiritually homeless around us. What is life like without a home, without shade or shelter? I doubt many of us have ever been truly homeless, but maybe you've lived in a desert climate. Or maybe you're a snowbird and you're thinking about kicking out of Minnesota here in a couple of months. Maybe you've lived in a sunnier, warmer place, and even some of our hotter stretches here in Minnesota give us a taste of what life can be like without shade and shelter. The sun scorches, right? I mean, it's so intense it can peel the paint off of cars, and it can blister your skin if you're exposed too long. I want you to imagine, if you will, with me, a life without the promise of future restoration in Jesus Christ. I want you to imagine a world that perpetually degrades and erodes with no hope that anything better is going to come about. I want you to think about your prospects at the end of this life without having a hope for anything beyond it. It seems like kind of a meaningless existence, doesn't it? Some of you can probably remember your life before you knew Jesus and what that was like. What's life like without shade and shelter? We consider it a basic human need. It's a pretty lonely place without it, isn't it? When the storms of life inevitably come, we feel bare and we feel open, and your problem, whatever it is, seems insurmountable, and you just don't have the resources to deal with it. And then, like Murphy's Law happens, right? And one thing compounds and becomes another, and things just start stacking up on top of themselves until you get to the point where you'll do anything to numb the pain, to not deal with the realities of life. A lot of addictions are born in scenarios very similar to this. And I'm not just saying that it's non-Christians who are addicts. But what I am saying is that when you have the promise of the resurrected Lord to cling to, your perception of life's problems dramatically shifts. When you look at life's problems and you go, you know what, they are about this big compared to the promise I have in Jesus and the future that he holds for me, nothing seems inconquerable. Because the storms of life have always and will always still come about, but his promise is for hope and for a future. And so if the tree, the kingdom tree that Jesus is talking about provides comfortable shelter from the storms of life, how do we invite other people to come and be a part of it? I think there's so much packed in these three verses. When Mike asked me to preach on the parable of the mustard seed, I was like, yeah, it's already done, sweet. Like, there's not too much to unpack in three simple sentences, but there is so much implication to this. I don't want us to miss it. The biggest being, I think this, Jesus has been talking about planting and about sowing and about reaping, and he's saying there is a harvest, but there are still many who need to be a part of that harvest that are not. And so to do that, to spread the word, to spread the good news, it's actually fairly simple. Like I said, it seems really complicated, and you're like, man, I have to be the best Christian out there. I have to know all the answers. I have to memorize my Bible, and I have to be able to pray all the good words, and I have to use just 40 times in every prayer so that God just knows that I'm just praying to just God. Sorry. I just ruined prayer for a lot of you. But no, it happens through living a life of faith, whatever your faith looks like. That as we branch out and continue the growth, that the tree continues to go out into the areas where we live just because we're simply present. Jesus kind of, he tacks on this little end, this last sentence of the parable, and he compares it to leaven. Jesus says the kingdom of heaven is like leaven that a woman took and hid in 3 measures of flour till it was all leavened. See, like leaven in dough, the gospel impacts everything that it is put into. It has to. Jesus said it would. He said his word goes out and does not return void. It does the work that it is meant to do. The apostles, by sharing their testimony, these 12 guys, after Jesus left the earth, ascended into heaven, they went out and shared their story. They hid this little bit of leaven in the massive body of mankind, and I don't think that they had Burnsville, Minnesota on their minds 2,000 years ago when they started that work. But here we are. They did what they were called to do. And that's why we plant new churches, to be a little bit of leaven in a new place and in an area that has our own context to it. We're a branch that reaches a new and a different place. If you think of the way a mighty tree grows, I have several mature trees at my property, and an oak starts, and it's the roots and the trunk which form the foundation of it, and then you get to some bigger branches spreading out, and then smaller branches off of that, and then we just keep going, and branches just keep on moving and finding light, and we get to the point where they're called twigs, and they're these tiny little things, but it just keeps going, and it's all for the benefit of the tree as a whole, that it keeps growing, right? The tiny little offshoot branch doesn't say, I'm not important because I'm not the trunk. No, it says, this is my job, and so I will go do it. The gospel message is shared in those new places where we go, where we plant churches, where we live out our faith, and like the smallest bit of leaven, the result is that the whole thing is affected. Like the smallest branch on the tree, it does its job in providing for the tree. There are many spiritually homeless people around that need a treehouse. That's Pastor Mike's word for it. I really enjoyed it. Like, I think it hits home. There are people that need a treehouse. They need to know that there's something waiting for them that's much greater than what they can see. We're planting a church in Lakeville with the tiniest of roots. From the tiniest of seeds, much like the church that you're sitting in now. We're committed to doing it. I'm committed to leading it because there are so many people around us seeking refuge in trees that are not the tree of life. They are believing lies. They are getting a false sense of security from the world around them that can provide absolutely no shelter when the storm comes. Their tree is uprooted and they're shaken from it, and they fall to the ground and they're broken and bruised, and they feel hopeless, and they find themselves homeless all over again, seeking the next tree that will offer them the least, the littlest bit of shelter. Church, we have a message that is of eternal security in Jesus. It is our job to go out and share it. And I think a lot of people get caught up in that. Like I said, your small fruit is still fruit. Your small faith is still a faith. Share whatever you got. Plant whatever you're working with. Because God says he can grow it exponentially, not you can grow it exponentially. He says it's my work that will be done, not yours. And so how do we do it? How do we do it? I think there are two simple ways that the gospel expands, and I call them simple, but I think this is the heart of what church is all about and what sharing your faith is all about. The first is we plant, and the second is we attract. Planting and attraction. See, the mustard seed here that I have, this is completely useless unless I plant it. It sits here and does absolutely nothing. It is of no benefit to anyone or anything. The dough is not affected by the yeast unless somebody puts it in there and kneads it throughout, right? So we must put our faith into action if we're to expect something to come from it. However, there is also an attraction to the kingdom that I think is maybe the more important part of what we do. It's up to us to make the branch of the tree look appealing for people to come to, right? And I'm not just talking about worship styles. I'm not just talking about a well-dressed, young, handsome pastor on stage. That's not me. I'm talking about the way that we conduct ourselves as Christians. When people look at the tree and they see this ugly, snarly branch with a bunch of thorns growing from it, it's really not that appealing, is it? And I don't want you to think that you have to be fake. You don't have to have all your ducks in a row, and you don't have to have it all figured out. But what you do have to do is be completely honest with the faith that you have. Be open with it. Show people who Jesus is. As the church, it's up to us to both be planting and making sure that what we plant is attractive. Because people are desperate for a place to call home. They really are. And it's our job as a church to provide that in the most loving way we can. In the most accommodating way we can. Pastor Mike is kicking off the morning chapel. Man, what an awesome way to reach a group of people who feel disenfranchised from the church. Church nowadays is super hip and trendy and has drums, and you have 15 million followers on social media before you've even launched and opened up a service. And you've got a pastor who drives a car that's most definitely a hybrid, and he has an unlimited bankroll at Starbucks. Like, that's how churches are planted these days. But that leaves out a whole section of the population that says, well, that's not me, but I need something like that. The God that you're talking about, I kind of want to know him, but man, I don't want to come and sit through your super loud stuff. Like the parable of the wheat and the weeds, I don't think it's our job to sort people out. I think it's our job to simply be, to simply live out the faith that we're feeling called to. Pastor Mike has felt called to do this extra service. It's going to take more time out of his day. It's going to require more effort from the team here at church. But he's willing to do it because it's what he's feeling God leading him to do. His work is simply to plant and grow so that people might hear and know about Jesus as Lord. Period. Plant and grow. So from small beginnings, they can grow into things exponentially greater than what we could ever imagine. The good news of the kingdom, it started as a small seed, just 12 people that Jesus entrusted his message to. Their message was that there's a safe place to find shade and shelter from the storms of life, and a tree that is eternal and it provides everything we could ever need. There are many around us who are seeking and looking for this comfort and security. They're finding it in false trees that cannot weather the storm. And it is our job as a church to keep reaching and growing and planting and living lives reflective of the hope that we say we have in Jesus. It's two parables in three sentences. Super quick and easy, but I think that's part of the beauty of it. So Jesus is teaching that even these tiny origins, these three sentences that he spoke, can have gigantic results. They have huge implications for the people that hear these words. If you wouldn't mind bowing your head, closing your eyes, praying with me, if you've been praying the whole time, you can continue to do that. Because church, we have a lot of work to do. There are a lot of people that do not know the security of a life founded in Jesus Christ. There are a lot of people who are spiritually homeless or transient, just bouncing from one thing to the next, trying to find something that fits, trying to find something that will last, trying to find something that will satisfy. And none of it does. Because none of it is eternal. None of it was made to be eternal aside from the kingdom. So my prayer this morning, church, is that we are a people, we're a church with a capital C, all churches united with Christ at the head, that we are a church full of people who live out a life of faith because we're called to. And trust God with the results. Trust God, who is Lord over the harvest, to grow what he needs to grow and to cut down what he needs to cut down. That we would be a people that put out attractively the hope that we have in Jesus. And that when we do mess up, that we can be the first ones to admit it and say, look, I'm not perfect either. My only saving grace in anything in this life is Jesus Christ. That his work on the cross, as we sang about, was enough to cover our sins. It paid our debt. And in that, there's freedom. Church, let's be people who invite, who welcome the spiritually homeless to come find refuge in the tree of life. Jesus, I want that for my own life. Jesus, I don't care where you send me or what you want me to do. I don't care if it's a church plant in Lakeville. I don't care if it's moving across the world to another country. You tell me what I need to do, Jesus, and I will do it. I pray for opportunities to see where I can help in the work that you're doing, where I can be the hands and feet of you here on earth. I pray that for the rest of the church this morning too, Jesus. That you go before us, that your spirit is at work in and around and through us, and that through it, we would see amazing fruit. We would see amazing results. We would see the harvest grow. Because you're worthy, Jesus. You're worthy of it. So take our small faith, Jesus, whatever it looks like. Take it, grow it exponentially as you say you will do, so that one day every knee will bow and every tongue will confess that you are Lord. We love you, we praise you, we thank you for our breath this morning in Jesus' name.